truth, dissembling, lying, and the wisdom to know the difference. Ever since I've put my first shiny nickel into my pocket, walked into Woolworths, and bought my first bag of M&Ms, I have been comfortably ensconced in the predictable world of a fixed-priced economy, an even playing field for consumer goods and services, based on the naive concept that the price of something should reflect the manufacturing costs plus a profit margin. I recognize that a few things fell out of this paradigm. Most notably, the price of cars and large appliances were negotiable, but these opportunities were never aggressively pursued by my father, who is in charge of such large purchases. My father grew up in a family where bargaining, or more pejoratively, dickering or haggling, were considered unseemly. And if you left some money on the table at the car dealership, so be it. That was just one of the privileges of having enough wherewithal in the first place. I don't think my father ever bargained for a car. He would walk in and pay list price. Dad used to drive these big, huge sedans, the kind of gas-guzzling cars that don't exist anymore, and one of them had something wrong with the pressure, such that the side window would shatter on hot days when the air conditioning was running full blast. After the first episode, the car dealer assured him that it was fixed. But a window shattered again. This time it was on the driver's side, and even worse, my father was driving with a client. The window exploded with a loud bang, and shards of glass flew everywhere. One stuck into Dad's neck, producing a trickle of blood that oozed into his shirt collar. The client yelled out, "My God, Ralph, you've been shot!" And it certainly sounded plausible. Dad simply returned the car and bought a different car at a different dealership. Even as a young teenager, I realized that my father's inherited aversion to any type of bargaining was way over the top. My basic premise was that if you're bloody and think you've been shot, the car dealership should fawn all over you and give you the choice of any car on the lot, no questions asked. There's bargaining, and then there's being taken advantage of. This incident stuck with me, and when I was finally in the position of buying my own car with my own money, I vowed eagerly to jump into that cat-and-mouse game of negotiation. A common marketing strategy at the time was the car dealer's promise to meet or beat any other offer. This was years before the internet, and verification of any car dealer's supposedly low offer required traipsing all over the place to get signed competitive bids to present to the dealer. I think most consumers were pretty lazy, but my husband and I did the due diligence and surprised the local dealer, who harumphed when challenged to meet our best offer. I didn't make any other big purchases for several years, and by this time the internet had arrived. This changed everything. No longer could car dealers exploit the laziness of consumers. Comparison shopping was now pathetically easy. Even better, now we have agents like Orbitz, Expedia, or Groupon to do the bargaining for us. At first, this seemed like the best of both worlds, no longer a fixed-price model, but a bargaining model where someone else did the dirty work. But I quickly realized that it's still a cat-and-mouse game. In the pre-internet world, pricing may have been based on my initial model of cost plus overhead, but now pricing seems to be exquisitely sensitive to demand, a demand that the seller can carefully track and manipulate using sophisticated internet tools. Airline tickets are the best example. Ticket prices fluctuate based on whether the airline company thinks you're a business or personal traveler. Airfares might go up on Saturdays, because that's when many make reservations, so demand is higher. One internet site suggests that the best time to make a reservation is on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time. But this recommendation may have a short shelf life. If airlines see increased activity at 2, they might simply raise the price. Supposedly, airlines can even profile the computer you're using to make the reservation and price accordingly. Just in case this isn't an urban legend, my husband makes plane reservations from different computers. Even Amazon purchases can vary based on the day you order. And then, of course, there are various email promotions that offer secret sales that are specifically tailored to your dredged internet data, such as past purchases, size, and zip code. I feel like I'm in a disadvantaged limbo. It might still be a fixed-price model for the brick-and-mortar retail stores, but it's a wild bargaining environment on the internet, and I don't know the rules. But if sellers are going to use sneaky internet tricks to manipulate me, then I feel that the gloves are off and it's time to fight back. The first step is patience, certainly the basic principle of bargaining. Nick and I have learned to never accept the first offer and are always ready to walk away from a deal. We recently purchased a new car that came equipped with Sirius, the satellite radio. The initial charge was close to $200 per year, which we declined. Over the next 6 months, Sirius came back again and again with progressively lower offers. We finally accepted an offer of $25 for 6 months. I canceled my People magazine subscription recently, and based on my Sirius experience, was eagerly waiting for them to come crawling back to me with progressively better deals. I had a dissembling strategy all planned out. I would tell them that I was a physician, true enough, but a pathologist doesn't see patients, and would display the magazine in my office, also true, except for the little detail that I'm the only person in my home office. But the only offer I got from People was higher than my original subscription. I guess People doesn't have the same demand problem as Sirius. I've come to realize that you can bargain for most things, and sellers are counting on the fact that we still believe we're in a fixed-price system. Dissembling has been my most successful bargaining technique. For example, if I find something I want online, I make the order via phone. When I talk to customer service, I will say something along the lines of, "Wasn't there a promotion code on my last catalog offering me free shipping? I've misplaced the catalog. Can you check for me?" About half the time I get the free shipping, which might be the tipping point for the purchase. When making a hotel reservation, you can innocently ask if there's a discount for AAA members, or say that a friend of yours got a different rate. The hotel will often give you the discount without verifying that you're an AAA member, or not, or agree to your fictional friend's rate. When I mentioned these strategies to our daughter, she looked at me in horror. Part of me was pleased that she was such an upright citizen, but I tried to explain that we're operating in a whole new bargaining world where sellers have no qualms about dissembling and are counting on customer laziness or confusion to avoid divulging the best price. The key principle to my style of bargaining is that you must develop your own rules about where you sit on the slippery slope of truth, dissembling, and lying. Several years ago, we were vacationing at Disney World with the kids, and the plan was to finish the trip with a visit to Nick's cousin in Tampa. As I stood in line, I happened to look down at Ned's head and was horrified to see head lice marching resolutely along his scalp. We could hardly show up infested with head lice, so we had to cut Disney World short and went back to the hotel to frantically delouse before checkout time. As a courtesy, we told the hotel that we had head lice. They mistakenly thought that we meant that we had acquired the head lice at their hotel. Without hesitation, they comped us the room. There was a brief pause as we pondered the moral dilemma. Do we humiliate ourselves by admitting that we were the culprits, at which point the hotel might charge us for the fumigation, or do we accept their kind offer? After all, there was an outside chance that our head lice were local. We said nothing. For our 25th anniversary, we decided to stay at a very fancy hotel in Phoenix, the Phoenician, in part because they advertised a grass tennis court, which we had always wanted to try. However, we were frequently disappointed with the service, particularly given the high cost of the room. Based on our Disney World experience, I decided to keep track of my issues and present them at checkout. For starters, the grass tennis court was closed due to some sort of galloping turf fungus. We had to pay extra for internet access and parking, while the bargain La Quinta across the street offered both for free. At one meal, our dinnerware was coated with old eggs, but the lemonade issue was my personal triumph. I had stopped at the golf shop and noticed that the snack bar was offering fresh squeezed lemonade. At $3.50 a glass, this actually seemed very reasonable, so I ordered one. The well-meaning Cabana boy then reached into the fridge and pulled out a jug of standard-issue, store-bought lemonade. When I objected that this wasn't fresh squeezed, he reassuringly showed me the label. Unfortunately, it proudly stated, "Tastes just like fresh squeezed." I pointed out the difference between what the menu said and what the jug said, and tried to explain to him that the word "like" made all the difference between dissembling and lying. When we checked out, I did a tour de force of dissembling to the desk clerk, distraught over the missed grass court tennis game, the lemonade, and other transgressions. For good measure, I threw in the dirty silverware. The desk clerk was only horrified by the silverware and comped us a room on the spot. To me, this was the minor issue, an innocent mistake easily corrected and certainly not worth a free night. In fact, I thought the faux lemonade was the most compelling piece of evidence. While I emerged successful with a comp room, I must say that it did feel a bit unseemly. The truth is that we should have just stayed at La Quinta across the street. I was playing this gotcha game too aggressively and turning into a person I didn't want to be. This is probably just what my father felt so many years ago in his gentle fixed-price world. If you want to play some games, you have to be comfortable leaving money on the table.